Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With David Slack in the studio this morning. Morena, David.
Morena, Rachel. I'm drenched in hand sanitizer.
Yeah, we're all isopropyl alcohol spraying everything in here all the time. It's really nice to see you, though.
It's funny to come in here and find it so clean. Yeah.
Anybody who's ever been into the BFM studios will know this is... It's spotless at the moment. Germ-free. Hey, we're talking to you about the big changes that have been going on in politics in just the last couple of days, to be honest. We're talking about the National Party caucus reshuffle, and we're also going to chat a little bit about some of these welfare announcements that the government's put out too. So let's start with the National Party. We've got new leaders. We've got a new lineup of the front benches. What are your thoughts on this leadership change? How are you seeing it from where you're sitting?
God, I'm starting to wonder if it was some elaborate arrangement just to get Simon Bridges' 3 weeks sabbatical. You know, they'll get to the end and say, just kidding. Yeah, you didn't think we could find somebody worse, but we found them.
It's been quite the rocky road, to put it probably politely, for the last couple of days.
I wonder if part of the problem is that, as far as I know, Todd Muller hasn't had much experience of TV interviewing.
Right.
I can't recall seeing him on TV. I don't think he's until now done much of that whole Q&A News Hub Nation round. And it shows, baby.
So man, what do you think is like kind of his, I guess, downfall with this at the moment? Because it has been sort of interesting to see the last couple of days people going from, who is Todd Muller, to also then not
who
the
thought
best
this was
interviews.
A good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe part of the problem is that he is a little like David Shearer, in that you can see the cogs turning as he's being asked the question. He's thinking, well, this side of my constituency wants to hear this, but this side wants to hear this. Part of it too is, I think he's part of that kind of management culture that's so used to being in charge and having people happily nodding and admiring what he's saying, that he's not quite so used to having it contested quite so vigorously, and he doesn't quite know what to happen when the mower goes into the long grass.
Well, as you say, though, this is something that does actually take a bit of time for politicians to learn. Do you think that if Muller kind of gets a grasp on that, the sort of, I guess, interaction with the news media, what do you think we could be seeing from him as a leader?
Well, clearly what he first had in mind was to be more constructive, because they'd clearly seen that the negativity of Simon Bridges had gone down like a cup of cold sick. So now he was looking for something else. But you also get the feeling that if, in fact, somebody like Matthew Hooton is involved in strategizing this, well, his approach sooner or later is to sneer and deride rather than make constructive propositions. That's his whole MO.
So who is Matthew Hooton, for people who might not familiar?
So they have a sort of a shared history in the National Party and in Fonterra and in communications, he and Muller, apparently. I wasn't aware of that, but Matthew began to share that with us over the last week when he was executing his long-standing role as a commentator for Radio New Zealand and The Herald, and then it became apparent that, in fact, he was also advocating enthusiastically for one of the people he was commentating on. So that's interesting.
Right.
But more to the point, he has been this commentator who has been a popular choice for example, Radio New Zealand, partly because what he says is not what other commentators say, and the reason for that is half of it's bullshit.
And
if I might be so frank, no, it's frustrated me forever, because he looks for the extravagant and the hyperbolic, and he won't just settle for this person's not doing quite a good job. He'll say this person is utterly useless, or this person is utterly corrupt. You know, and he just always goes to the top shelf for the descriptions, and so it makes for great media, but it's also, to return to my earlier proposition, bullshit, Rachel. and so this guy has had this sway for a long time, and now here he is involved in some way, not as usual, not entirely disclosed. We don't entirely know, but he is involved in counselling Muller, and where that will take him remains to be seen, as they say.
This has been maybe something that has been bubbling away before this week, maybe in the last couple of weeks that we've seen, is what the election might look like when it comes down to people campaigning.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a very, very popular Labour Party. We've got a very, very popular Prime Minister. So that's a hard place for the opposition to start from, especially dealing with a pandemic. You know, it is a difficult place for the opposition to be in. What do you think we're going to see? Is this going to be a bit of a nasty fight? I think a lot of people were hoping that maybe Muller as the leader might change that. We might not see so much viciousness in the politics this year. Do you think that is something we could be predicting, or what are your thoughts on that, David?
Well, there was talk yesterday that the National Party has been looking at setting up some kind of intel unit to get dirt on the opposition. So that's not propitious. There's also an air of desperation to this that underlies it all. The reason there's been a change is because you had a lot of MPs worried that their job was going to go. There's a certain irony in that too, the party of free enterprise being upset that a guaranteed income is disappearing. But anyway, putting that to one side, there is an intention, I think, to cleave to their beloved trope that they like to use, that the National Party is the one that understands how to run things, even though you've got 30 years of history that might suggest that's not entirely correct. And so they will be using that to argue that they can spend the recovery money better than these clowns. However, if that doesn't get traction, and you would say that the kind of mood of the public to this point might tell you that's how it will play, then you might see that kind of dirty tricks desperation. Mm. There is also the element of Topham Gurran, who I'm not sure. I saw it asserted yesterday that the government has recruited them. Sorry, that's
so who
the
Topham Gurran,
that couple of young guys from here who went to Australia and to England and did very well using memes and social media to devastating effect by essentially putting your thumb on the butcher's scale and misrepresenting to advantage your candidate's position to the electors, and it's deleterious to democracy, basically. And so here they are here now, according to that proposition I read yesterday. I don't know enough about this to say for certain that's what's going on. But anyway, wherever they are, that will add a dimension of dirty politics to it if it happens.
Mm. So you're not necessarily envisaging this might be a nice, calm, sedate year of politics.
It may not be kind.
Right. Well, talking a little bit more about the government now, let's touch on these welfare announcements, because I think there's been some surprise, perhaps, in the way that we've seen this COVID package roll out for beneficiaries, or it's a benefits package, basically, to support people who have seen a loss of income from the 1st of March. And it is $490 a week, which is much more than the current job seekers benefit, which is great in many ways. People need that money. That's definitely something we're seeing right now. But also there's been a lot of commentary that why isn't this rolling out across the board? Why is there this group that's getting more benefit than a group that's already on the existing benefit? What are your thoughts around this, David?
Well, it absolutely bears out what everybody's been saying since the early 90s when you had the swinging benefit cuts that Ruth Richardson and Jenny Shipley orchestrated. Nobody has bothered to really undo properly ever since. And the assertion people made then and have ever since is this is not enough to live on. And the whole idea was that actually it wouldn't be enough to live on. It would motivate people to go out and get a job, because that was the only reason they didn't have a job. They were shirkers. That's the implication of the thing. And of course, that is turned to my favourite word of the morning, also bullshit. And here we have the demonstration of it in absolute proof now. Oh, actually, if you need money, you will have to give you about 500. Yes, you're right. That's what it takes. That's what the benefit ought to be. And that's the great problem. And the further thing we've had demonstrated this year is when push comes to shove, you actually can find a hell of a lot more money, and you certainly could have for this. You know, the relative proportion of money we spend on benefits is, and I'm being very loose here, but it's about $2 or $3 billion on the job seeker and related allowances, and about $12 billion on superannuation.
Mm.
So, you know, proportionately, it's vastly more there.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of tells you the size of the thing you're dealing with. Oh, and I'll also throw in the accommodation supplement. That's somewhere between $1 and $2 billion. And that is also kind of wasted money because it's just inflated, it's accelerated the mania of the property market, and that means that the rents just keep running away. So all of that's a mess. I'm saying all of this by setting up a context for something that I'm really keen on, and that is not a universal basic income, but I am sort of keen on that, and maybe as a transition still am. But in the longer run, there's an argument that if your UBI is good, is adequate, you can't sustain it.
Right.
And if it's inadequate, you can't sustain yourself.
Yeah.
And so you're forever in this trap. But here's the proposition that Finland did an experiment with it and concluded that maybe the thing would be to expand the range of services and goods and products that the government provides for free. You know, right now we do it with health, we do it with education. Yeah. Why could you not also do it with, for example, energy, transport, accommodation to some extent? Well, we have done that for a long time, but come back and do it properly. Maybe food too. A whole bag of things that mean that everybody is assured of the basics for their life.
So you're not having to pay for the things that
that's
you need
right.
to live necessarily.
Because as the accommodation supplements demonstrated, you give money and then expect it to come back. Well, actually, the person who's getting, who's making the profit on it kind of accelerates the whole process away, so you never actually find a sustainable basis for it.
So you're
but
not
if the
necessarily
state is actually doing it, different.
So you're not necessarily advocating for a UBI. You're advocating for some sort of booster benefits and maybe also this kind of service boost as well.
Universal basic services.
That's,
essentially.
Yeah, really interesting.
The more I look at it, the more I like it. Oh, and a plug! Great big plug.
Great
I've
big
done
plug.
Two things on Greenpeace and Sharesies exploring these ideas. So
right,
go and have a look.
Go and have a look. Well, David, it's lovely to have you back in the studio and obviously some big topics to really kick us back into it. So we'll be talking to you very soon again.
Lovely.
See
Cheers,
ya.
Rachel.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.